Welcome to episode 349 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on language and communication. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. Welcome back. The whole fam Danley showed up at once.
I know.
I had to be the big jerk who's like, I got a show to record.
Well, I did say out loud, how do we get rid of you guys?
Speaking of shows, I want to mention that our co-host here is the host of his show.
Yes.
After more than 2.5 years of recording, almost every Monday, we are finally releasing some.
And now. I'm so excited. I'm not nervous at all. I don't know why I'm anyways.
Anyways, yes, you can find all of that by going to the brothersbarton.net.
Yes.
So, good times. Now let's talk about talking.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to get to early hominids eventually here, so let's talk about monkeys.
Okay.
I brought up the whole let's teach them sign language and various other things they've done with that.
Right, right.
And the joke being, why don't we go out there and poison the various species with this language thing?
Absolutely.
Some of them learn rather well.
Yeah.
Like if you take chimpanzees.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not every single one of them does.
The individual chimpanzees?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a sort of a bell curve on how well they learn language or whether or not they bother to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ones who are best at it seem to have some deficiencies. Never get much better than a 3-year-old child at communicating.
Yeah.
They never use the same kind of grammar as the researchers.
Oh.
They, their sentences tend to be, sentences.
So not even
pickle
quite.
Fast, open. you know.
I got you, yeah.
And there's a weird lack from all of this. They don't seem to ask many questions.
Oh. Well, that suggests something.
But I'm not sure what the hell it is.
Yeah, tickling my brain. But
some other animal models they've used, like parrots, have been known to actually ask questions.
Oh.
But all these little monkeys who would love to just keep you playing instead of leaving the lab, not once have they done the 3-year-old child thing and go,
why?
Over and over again, just to keep you there.
Yeah.
Huh. When they're using their own calls.
Okay.
They only seem to put together 2 calls at a time.
Okay.
Some sort of limit to the way they can talk. But it's the beginning. This is probably where language started for us.
Okay.
There are many different theories as to how it turned into what we do.
Yeah.
My favorite is tool use. So that's the one we're going to cover. I promise there are many, 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 many other theories. But before we get into that, I want to cover a little bit more about this whole existence of lies and its ability to destabilize signaling systems, which we did on Monday. Our sponsors today, precognitive plagiarism, open source surgery,
<That's terrible laughs>
and antimatter currency.
I'd pay you, but you know, you can't take it from me.
I'll owe you as much as you want, but both of us, no.
Yeah, yeah.
So about those bugs.
Those bugs, yeah.
Those bugs and all that stuff we talked about in the previous episode.
Oh, okay.
Let's see if I can make this simpler.
Uh-huh.
It's the theory that the only way to get a communication signal to be stable is if there are not too many liars.
Okay, right.
We can take a real-world example of this.
Yes.
The coral snake.
Okay, yes.
Being the one that is telling the truth of this.
Mm-hmm.
This critter, there's actually versions of it on many continents.
Right.
But we're talking about the North American coral snake.
Okay.
It is a part of the same family as cobras.
Oh, okay.
Which means they have fangs that are just out there.
Okay.
And they use a neural toxin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing that the cobra family does. But the coral snake doesn't have that hood or flatten itself out or anything.
Oh, okay.
But it is very pretty.
Yes, yes.
It's very brightly colored with red, yellow, and black.
Yes, indeed.
You compare it to the other poisonous snakes in North America.
Yeah.
They're all pit vipers.
Okay.
They got like hinged fangs, and I think the poison works differently.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They actually, the hinged fang design is better, arguably, because they can strike and pump a lot of venom and then pull back. Coral snake and the cobras,
yeah,
they have to bite and hold on.
I'm going to live on your
and
ankle.
Even chew a little bit. I mean, not for very long, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
There's time for the thing you just bit to get back at you.
Mm-hmm.
Coral snakes eat other snakes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, along with a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
They share their habitat with a couple of critters like the milk snake.
Okay.
Or the crimson king snake.
Uh-huh.
Both of which also eat snakes.
Battle royale.
And they're the liars.
Okay.
They're the ones who are colorfully banded,
mm-hmm.
somewhat like the coral snake.
Okay.
The milk snake, for example, it's got red and black, but it has white instead of yellow.
Okay.
King snake, it has red, black, and yellow.
Yeah.
But they're in a different order.
Right.
There's an old rhyme. It's been put a lot of different ways. But mm-hmm. Red next to black, venom lack.
Okay.
Red next to yellow,
mm-hmm.
will kill a fellow.
Ah. That sounds like the oldest version. Some Western guy saying it.
Yeah, I'll kill you. You've got the presence of the actual correct signal.
Yes.
Meaning I am highly venomous.
Absolutely.
Don't mess with me or you'll die.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the ones who are faking it.
And people muttering to themselves, what was that rhyme?
What was that rhyme?
I'm not messing with it.
There's some interesting things about this particular example. There are some places where things like the Scarlet King or Milk Snake
mm-hmm.
are living, where there are no coral snakes.
Okay.
And yeah, they get preyed upon by the sorts of things that eat snakes.
Oh,
uh-huh. In areas where there are also coral snakes, they don't get preyed upon
quite as often. As often, right.
Yeah.
Even the birds know the rhyme, huh?
Like, if there are too many liars, then it actually, something as conspicuous as bright colors
mm-hmm.
becomes a problem.
Yep.
Because now you're just easy to see.
Over here.
And delicious. I'm not sure whether or not I believe the contention. There must be a truthful signal for language to develop.
Yeah, yeah.
And a truthful signal we don't have control of.
Right, right.
But there is such a signal.
Yeah.
Actually, a whole crap load of them.
Okay.
Like the way your pupils dilate or contract.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's a completely involuntary reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And your mental activity and or emotional state is reflected in the way your pupil changes.
Okay.
Or
mm-hmm.
heart rate.
Yeah.
Respiration.
Mm-hmm.
How your stomach feels.
Okay.
Blood flow.
Uh-huh.
Which sort of goes into your face.
Oh, right, right, right.
Right. When deeply embarrassed or perhaps angry,
mm-hmm.
you can become flushed.
Okay, yes.
Really noticeable on white people.
Mm, oh, right. I was about to, yeah.
Anyway. You can also, when frightened,
mm-hmm.
end up with the blood draining from your face.
Ah, uh-huh.
And you end up much paler than usual.
Yeah. Is that to scare them, make them think you're a ghost?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's for, Phil. How'd you know? theory being that you need that blood for other things, like your muscles.
Running. Okay, gotcha.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And then there's your facial expressions.
Okay.
That one you actually have some control over.
Yeah.
But there's this thing called micro expressions.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, you know, it got a little hyped up. It's by no means a perfectly reliable channel of information,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that it happens at all, like you're sitting there playing a game of poker,
yeah,
and you have the best hand all night, right?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. You can actually even feel your face for half a second try to make that big eating grin.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you have to suppress it.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the articles I was reading that was saying micro expressions aren't that reliable was actually saying what is pretty reliable to see when someone's trying to deceive you
mm-hmm.
is rigidity.
That makes sense, right? But then you got to ask why they're, what are they trying to hide? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't we done yet? Well, let's be done.
It's your show.
Before I forget,
mm-hmm.
this is important. That whole rhyme about red next to black.
Yeah.
Venom lack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And red next to yellow will kill a fellow.
Yeah.
That is specific to North America. There are other coral snakes with other color patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get yourself killed in Asia or or Europe or Africa.
It's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've even heard rumors of a coral snake in Mexico somewhere. that breaks these rules. So basically, if you see a really colorful snake, don't touch.
Right, right. Saving the lives of our international audience.
Apes.
Yeah.
Something about their vocalization for when they're making language.
Yeah.
They don't seem to do it unless they are actually feeling that emotion.
Okay.
A particular thing about human language, a distinctive thing, is our ability to talk about things that aren't happening right here and now.
Oh, okay.
Whereas monkeys, all the way up to and including great apes, seem to need something to be happening right now.
Well, see, they're Buddhists. They're in the moment, man.
Yes, and there's also that limitation on their grammar usage. It's interesting, in humans, and welcome to another patented, totally seamless edit, brought to you by your host, Brad Barton, also the producer of the lab. This is what happens when I manage to, say exactly the opposite of what I meant to say. There's an area of the brain called the operculum, and it's used by both primates and humans for simple grammar and communication. There's an area called Broca's area, used by humans for more complicated sentences, and for apes for other things entirely. That's what I meant to say. Let's go back to what I actually said. An area of the brain called the operculum, or operculum.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it's Latin for lid, actually, or little lid.
Oh. Is that the size of it or the shape of it?
Yeah. It's covering an area called the insular cortex.
Ah.
It's down in the Sylvian fissure.
Uh-huh.
Now, aren't you glad you asked? Uh-huh. Don't you know a lot more about the brain all of a sudden?
I am a freaking genius now.
Oh, it includes like the secondary summary. Where was I?
There's a lid. There's some other big words.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, more complicated grammar in humans uses an area called Broca's area, or Broca's area, Broka's area.
Okay.
This damage to this area, especially the left side and 97% of the population, causes trouble with talking.
Okay.
That can include having only a few words you can utter at all.
All
right. It can mean very disjointed, poorly assembled sentences and repeating certain words over and over again.
Really? Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. as a twist to this, damaged Broca's area often leaves swear words intact, which are, as it happens, emotional utterances.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I looked around. I was trying to find out if the operculum was at all implicated in generating swear words.
Oh, yeah.
And I could not find much research about swearing.
Because that would tie in so well with the great apes, you know?
Yeah, and the emotional utterances.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything to confirm it.
Well, darn.
And the most recent research I've seen on swearing was like from 2012, or at least neural imaging swearing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, well, not a hot topic.
Nobody gives a damn.
They've also discovered that Broca's area consists of two slightly separate areas.
Okay.
One is part of a language network.
Right.
And the other is part of a cognitive network involving things like working memory and putting things in order.
Oh, okay.
And you can see how they might be linked together strongly, because you sure need working memory to be able to use complex grammar.
Yeah, yeah. And see, putting things in
order.
I
just said grammar wrong.
Somebody check his brain.
Here's the part where it kind of links into the whole maybe it was tool use that started this. In other great apes, non-human great apes.
Okay.
When they are using that area, it is for fine manipulation with their hands, very small finger movements,
right,
and their mouths.
Okay.
Because they do use their mouths as tools. One study saw chimps who were making spears to hunt some smaller primates.
Yeah.
And yeah, they break the branch off the tree and then sharpen it with their teeth. So yeah, fine manipulation. And a funny thing about this is they've been observed in the wild while doing finicky tasks with their hands, making mouth motions.
Okay. They're kind of cross wires going.
Yeah. So imagine you are teaching someone how to make a particular tool, and you are sort of humming as your mouth is making these motions. Okay. And actually, humans do this all the time. They sit down there and they go, okay, let me see.
Yeah, yeah. Or the tongue comes out and like forces up one lip. Yeah.
Over time, some of the noises you were making coincidentally could be associated with some of the actions you have to take or even the tool you have made.
I like this. Okay.
So perhaps that was the beginning of what eventually turned into human language.
Do I like it because I can wrap my head around it, or...
Well, that's why I like it. Anyway, that brings us to the question about when language exactly started.
Yes.
And was it just with Homo sapiens sapiens, us?
Yes.
Or what about the Neanderthals?
Oh, right.
Or Homo erectus, or any of the other guys?
Mm-hmm.
We will fail to answer this question next time.
Okay.
See you then.
Bye.